As Lisa told me, I can't start this year as I've started every year for the last 30 years. Good morning. It's not a good morning for Father's Town. It's a morning of where not only a country but a people are in mourning. And so I think I put on the sheet that today is a day of mourning for Klal Yisrael, and our learning of Torah is the Lunishmak Aftali Gilad Vayal Hashem Yimkom Damah. God shall avenge their blood. And I have to tell you the truth that even the few days of preparing this year, with the changing and shifting moods, there's no question about it that the general mood of each individual and the whole country affected what it was that I saw in the parsha. And we're talking about a parsha where the hero villain is of course Bilam. Bilam's a murderer. We're going to see what Bilam was. He was hired to curse the Jewish people. He wants to bring death and destruction upon them. The only thing is, when he comes face to face with them in the desert, it becomes a completely different story. And here it was in the early hours of this morning, this second page. The second page is the one that only has three items on it. I just added that minutes before I left the house. I'm going to start with that. The top is one of the orations of Bilam, the magician, erstwhile prophet, in quotation marks, Mi mana afar Yaakov mispart rova Yisrael, who can count, the Jews, an eternal people. And he says, Tamot nafshi mot yisharim. He wants to die like the death of the righteous ones. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, understand? After 150 years or 170 years on his bed, and my end should be like theirs. Now he would like to die like a good Jew, but he's certainly not ready to live the moral life that we live. So then we find out later on in Parshat Matos, two parshiot further, we find out what indeed happened to Bilam. God tells Moshe to send the Jewish people out to wage war against Midian. They wiped out every male. That Malchem Midian, Barguach Halein, Midian was a great enemy. The king of Midian, they killed him at Evi, Bet Rekim, Bet Tzur, Bet Pur, Bet Reva, Chameshet Malchem Midian. Bilam, the son of Beor, was killed by the sword. You are not a Yashar, you're a hater who wants the destruction of the Jewish people. You're not going to die on your bed, Mot Yisharim. You're going to be hunted down and you're going to be killed. You hear that song? That's exactly what should happen. With the brutal, cruel killers. Three young boys, what did they want from them? But this is a hatred what does Robert Wisbridge call it? The lethal obsession, an obsession of 3,500 years. It's not to be believed. Now we're going to see that there are statements that are made by Balaam that when we really think about it in terms of the present situation of the Jewish people, it's not to be believed. 3,500 years ago, he saw so clearly. And by the way, it wasn't him. This is God putting, it's the words of God that I put into his mouth. God's words are in his mouth. I tell you, when I think of it, this is another one of these great psukim that you no longer need any sophisticated proofs that Moshe emes v'toras emes. All you need is this one pasuk. Where do I have it over there? Go to number 2 on the first sheet. I'll read it all. Vayisol v'sholov v'yomer. He said his parable, and this is Bilam speaking. Min Aram Yarchini Bolok Melech Moab, from Aram, Bolok the king of Moab brought me. Meharadei Kedem, from the mountains of the east. And his request of me was L'cho Oro Yaakov, L'cho Zoram of Yisrael, curse Yaakov, and then express your anger upon Israel. And poor Bilam is restrained. He can't do it. More echoes, lo kapo kale. Who can I curse that God didn't curse? Umaya es on lo zaham Hashem han. Can I let my anger out when God is not angry? And then what a pasuk. Kimedo shukimer enu. I see him. His original origins, he's looking back, where did Klal Yisrael come from? I see him, Meirosh Tzurim, from the rats, Umigvot, and from the hills, Ashurenu, where you spy him. And Chazal tell us, the Horim and the Gvos, the Horim are Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, the Gvot are the four Imos, Soror, Rivka, Rachav, Aleh. I see what stack they come from. Hein am levodog yishkon ubargoyim lo yitchashav. This pasuk is unbelievable. You just have to sit and think about it. Behold, it is a nation that will dwell in solitude alone and not be reckoned among the nations. It's so true. We're just plain, separate, distinct, different. There's the whole world on one side, and there's us on the other side. And this was written in Torah 3,500 years ago. Now, Soloveitchik, in his great essay, Kol Dodi Dofeik, talks about the, and he considers the great error of secular Zionism. Secular Zionism, so you have there are two faces to secular Zionism. One, that it's the greatest success story of the 20th and the 21st century. Greatest success story of all. There are most probably about 100 or 120 new nations that came into being following the Second World War, the collapse of the British Empire, the French Empire, the Russian Empire. All over the world, new nations were coming into being. And there it was. We remember it. We're of the age that we remember it. At midnight, you understand, the French tricolor goes down, or the Union Jack the Union Jack, and then a minute after midnight, the skull and crossbones, the new flag of this new nation that's coming into existence. And in the street, there's joy and dancing. And by morning, they're killing each other, and they're killing each other 50, 60, 70 years later. Only one nation came into being. That is a source of stability, and yes, indeed, democracy, and it's unbelievable. We're the only ones. We're the only ones. Unbelievable. So in that sense, we have also Am Levodav Yishkon, a people that dwells alone. So the Chof said that this was the mistake. Aside from the fact that they're the greatest success story of the 20th and the 21st century, but they thought that they would be able to turn into a member of the family of nations. There would be no anti-Semitism would disappear. We're going to be in our own little country, and we're not going to bother anybody, and let the whole world go about its things, and we're going to be, you know, members of the family of nations. Achavei, first of all, who wants to be a member of that family? Here's a place where I can choose my family. Who wants to be part of that family? But more than that, we never became part of that family, because they don't want us there. And the truth is, we don't belong there. We have nothing in common with them. We have nothing in common with the rest of the world. What a statement. Ein Am Levodav Yishkon, a people that dwells alone. There was a book written by Yaakov Herzog. Yaakov Herzog was one of the sons of the chief rabbi, Rabbi Yitzhak Isaac Halevi Herzog. He had two sons. One was Yaakov, and the other was Chaim. Chaim went on to become president of the state of Israel. Yaakov was a great Talmud Chacham who was going in the footsteps of his father. He was the head of the Foreign Office at the time of the Six-Day War. A brilliant man. He was even elected to become chief rabbi of England, and then he took ill, and I think he died at age 50 or 51. What a loss. That was a terrible loss to the Jewish people. So he wrote a book entitled A People That Dwells Alone, and he describes people from all over the world who were coming to Israel after the Six-Day War. They were coming over here. But he, remember one sentence that he wrote, but one thing they'll never do, they're not going to invite us for afternoon tea at 4 o'clock. It was the brief period of time that we were the darlings of the world, but that faded away quite quickly. But then again, I'll tell you, I had this feeling again, Ein Am Levodav Yishkon, when I saw the video of the three mothers before the United Nations in Geneva. And you know what? You see this massive auditorium, and nobody there could care less about their plea. There was something
very,
very noble about the way they looked. Yeah, those three tichels in the midst of that great den of iniquity. But we are the people that dwells alone, not the God. Go back to the second sheep. I'm afraid that today the shear is going according to how I feel. I'm not right to pick. It's different, I can't help it. That last piece on the page is a piece that comes from the end of Rostropovich's great essay, Cold, Though Deep, Though Fake. My beloved Knox. It's a pasuk from Shirat Shirim, my beloved Knox. And what he uses that pasuk for is that starting from after the Shoah, God has been knocking on the doors of the Jewish heart. And it's such a powerful, powerful lesson. But basically, it boils down to the following. There are two covenants that God entered in with the Jewish people. The first he calls Brit Mitzrayim. There was a covenant in Egypt. There was a second covenant, and that was Brit Sinai. But Sinai was the second covenant, a treaty that was entered into between God and the Jewish people. The difference between the two is the following. There is what he terms Brit Goral. Goral means fate. There are people who are joined together by a common fate. And there's no question about it that the overwhelming sense of the Jewish people of the last 3 weeks was where what happens to one Jew any place in the world, it happens to us all. Every Jew in the world felt the fear, the pain, the suffering. That's Brit Goral. And he says there's no way to get away from it. There is no way that a Jew will ever be able to escape. You can try whatever you want, and in the final analysis, they're still going to point you out as a Yudha or a whatever else they call us. But in addition to Brit Goral, in addition to this covenant of a common fate, there is what he calls Brit Yehud. Yehud is we have a destiny. We have a common destiny. Oh, that's a great deal different than a common fate. A common fate is something that's imposed upon me. I'm coerced into it. I have no choice. Here it is. I find myself caught in a situation that I can't get out of. It's an existence that is forced and coerced upon a person. And in a sense, it's the kind of existence where a person sees himself as an object. The forces of the world are impacting on me. I can't do anything. I'm caught. I'm stuck. That was Brit Mitzrayim. That was the covenant of Egypt. Oh, no, but the Rebbeinu took Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim and he brought it to Sinai. And then he gave them a goal, an objective, a destiny to become a holy nation on the face of this earth and a light unto all of the nations. This is already not a forced or coerced kind of existence. This is an existence that I choose and I'm active and I take the initiative. And I move ahead throughout all history. Bilam saw the uniqueness of the Jewish people, the Gemara says. He saw it. The only thing is, he only saw the common fate. He did not rise to the level that he could see that there's a common great destiny. Watch. Could I like to read one paragraph of the Chav? And let's say maybe one other word. There are two words in English. One is lonely, and the other is alone. And there's a world of difference between lonely and alone. Lonely is something very, very negative. We've had the feeling of being lonely. It's not a good feeling. But being alone,
when one has a destiny of greatness, power, majesty, and being alone. When he said, Hein Am Levado Yishkon, when Bilam says, a people that dwells alone, he's really talking about a lonely people, because he doesn't get the rest of it. Now forgive me if I move you from one page to the next. Here. The first sheet, the second side, number 6. The Lord compares what Bilam says in this parasha, Hein Am Levado Yishkon, the people that dwells alone. He compares it with one of the last statements that Moshe Rabbeinu says before he dies, at the end of the Zot Habracha. Vayishkon Yisrael Betach. Vayishkon Yisrael Betach. Bodod Ein Yaakov. Bodod Ein Yaakov. A letter is dug on the Tidosh of Shomov Yarfutal. I don't have the whole English translation of it. There it is. Thus Israel shall dwell secure, solitary in the likeness of Jacob, in the land of grain and wine. Even his heavens shall drip with dew. He also uses the word Bodod. But he's talking about a completely different kind of bodod. Not lonely at all, but alone in their great majesty as being in the likeness of Yaakov. By Yishkon Yisrael, Israel dwells in security. Bodod Ein Yaakov, alone in the likeness of Yaakov. And as they live on their land, El Eretz Dagon V'Tidosh, a land of grain and wine, of Shomov, the very heavens drip with dew. He takes these two psukim, you'll see them on, the Hof takes the two psukim, the pasuk that Bilam says and the one that Moshe says, and he says, they're talking of two different kinds of bodod. Bilam's bodod is loneliness. Moshe Rabbeinu's bodod is alone, majestic, powerful, eternal, a great kadosh, a holy people. Let's see the bodod. Amnon. גם בחוויית הייעוד המשותף קיים אלמנט של פרישה. I will translate, and this is a very serious essay of the Rav, a deep essay. He says, in the experience of a common destiny, there is of course a sense of being separate from, אבל הפרישה הייעודית, the being separate because we have our own destiny, Tiva umahuta shonim legamri, the nature and the essence of that kind of separateness is completely different than the separateness of being of a common faith. Watch. Ein hi hargasha shlilit shebilam chaza oto b'nevuato. This is not the negative feeling that Bilam saw in his great vision, Hein Am Levado Yishkon, a people that will dwell lonely like. Elo toda'am yuchedet sheiftiach Moshe leKnesset Yisrael, the separateness and the aloneness of a common destiny is what Moshe Rabbeinu saw. B'sha'ot ha'achronot l'fnei Motom, in the last hours before his death, by Yishkon Yisrael Petar Bodod Ein Yaakov. Lamitos of the Varn, Ein Prishazu Elo Levadiyot. His language is good. Levadiyut means aloneness, separate from Bodod, which means lonely. Levadiyut shel kiyum nehedar, nehedar v'nehedar. This is the aloneness of beauty and majesty. Tohor umekudosh, purified and holy. Zohi halavadiyut hamipatab, being chudav shalom. This is the aloneness that is expressed by a unique people. B'tzalmo hakodesh, the holy form in which he is made. Ubechavayato, her existentialit, his extension as existential being represents something that is unique and different. And you know what? The goyim out there, they know it, but they don't want to admit it. They don't want to admit it. Zohi halavadiyut shel haneshama hayoshevet b'seder. This is the aloneness of a soul that sits in hiding, b'mamakei ha'avaya, in the depths of existence. Zohi halavadiyut sheshma ishiyut ruchanit. The aloneness that represents a spiritual personality. Individuality. We're individuals, we're different. There's no question about it. We are different. Bill was only able to see the negative aspect of this being alone. This loneliness. We're not lonely. We're not lonely at all. At every crucial moment in our history, we found ourselves absolutely alone. No question about it. In the Shoah, we were alone. The whole world closed their gates. I've been reading again things that I read over and over again. The American government and the immigration policy of the American government during the course of the Second World War. Oy vey vey. Boy, there are guys down there that are burning in gas. It's unbelievable. And in each country, was in Canada, there were a lot of anti-Semites, but there was always, at a crucial position, there was a guy in the State Department by the name of Breckinridge Long. This Breckinridge Long was a Russian official whose job was to make sure that not one single Jew is going to get in to these great United States of America. He was totally dedicated and devoted to that. There was another period at which there were 20,000 Jewish children in Vichy, France. And Jewish organizations came to the Roosevelt government to get these kids out of Vichy, France, before Hitler finally moves in. They're just children. So some fancy socialite woman said, those 20,000 children, before you know it, they're going to turn into 20,000 ugly adults. Why is she burning for that statement? 20,000 ugly adults. Yiddish a kinderloch, you understand. Let's go a little. Do some more of the love. Zo hi halavadiyut hamavginat kvodo shel ha'adam v'gam et bechirato. What an important sentence. There's an aloneness that demonstrates the dignity and honor of a man. The dignity and the honor of a person who chooses his destiny in life. Zohi halavadiyut shel Moshe. That was the aloneness of Moshe. She'am lo hevil ruchu ha'gadol ulechazono on his God. The people didn't always understand the great vision that he represented. Zohi halavadiyut shel Eliyahu v'yeter ha'nevi'im. That's the aloneness of Eliyahu and the other prophets. Zohi Matinot Sholeh Diber Avron El Na'arav. This is a theme of the Chav. This is the aloneness that Avraham Avinu said to Yitzchak when they came to Mount Moriah. And he said, Shvulachem Tor Lachamor, he told the two who had accompanied him, you stay here with the donkey. Vaniv Anan Neil Charko, I and the boy are going to go further and we are going to bow down. We are going to bow down before God. He's making a statement that we're different. You can remain with your physical existence, but ours is an existence where we march closer and closer to the great drama of Jewish history. At a time when loneliness is really a feeling of inferiority. The one who's alone feels inferior. And it's a regesh nechitut harsani, a destructive feeling of nechitut. Hamavatei shlila atzmit, that represents a negation of myself. That's what loneliness is. But that's not the levadiyut. The levadiyut of the Jewish people, their aloneness is not negative, it's not destructive. This is not a result of any feeling or sense of inferiority. The aloneness of the Jewish people bears eloquent testimony to his greatness and to his sanctity. It bears testimony that in the Roshut HaYachid, within our homes and our dwelling place, there is a sense of great sanctity. Loneliness robs a person of a sense of peace of mind. Aloneness, that graces a man with confidence. Kvod atzmi, self-respect, chashivut ve'imun, I mean something. Batach betach, betach batach. He's saying, Bilam didn't see that. Moshe Rabbeinu saw that. And earlier when the Lord had spoken about the mistake of the secular Zionism, I remember when I heard it, the first time I heard it, I nearly fainted. The second time I heard it, I didn't faint, but two of our leaders had said at a moment of great joy when they were signing some kind of a peace treaty with our partnering, Lo Od Am Levadad Yishkan. No longer will we be a people who dwells alone. What a terrible, terrible, tragic mistake. If the Torah says, Am Levadad Yishkan, and Betach Badad, and it's so true, 3,500 years later, this is our destiny. The fact is, you know, we're different. Not only we're different, between us, we're better. What should we do? We have to realize it, that we're better. We're not what the world says about us. There's another extremely important point about this Bilam. Bilam, in the parasha, there are three orations. He speaks three times. Each one of the three times is absolutely beautiful. These are beautiful children. Beautiful. He's describing what the Jewish people, what that people is. And then there's a fourth. The fourth oration is the one at which he describes what's going to happen in time to come. This one-eyed Bilam sees awesome things. And the fact is, the Rambam himself says, how do we know that there's such a thing as Mashiach? This idea of Mashiach? He says, in Torah, it is stated by Bilam. Bilam is the one who tells us that there's going to be a Mashiach. And here, Number four is the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. This is a famous Netziv. I think it is. And if it isn't, it should be. The Netziv has his own unique pshat in Hein Am Levodot Yishton, a people that dwells alone. U'Pagoyim Lo Yitchashav. And there it is. There it is. In the middle of that piece, on the left-hand side, Hein Am Levodot Yishton. I will read where it's underlined. Hein Am Levodot Yishton, a people that dwells alone. Lo kederech kol uma b'lashon, not like every nation and tongue. Tishaholchim b'golam, when they go off into exile. Mitarvim im ha-maglim otam. Umasigim b'zeh arvo v'chashivot. The Jewish people are different. They're not like every other people that, when they're in exile, they come into another society and they become part of the society. The melting pot. They melt.
We don't
melt. Everything melted when they came to America. Nebuchadnezzar was come out of meltdown of the Jewish people too. Until we picked ourselves up. He says, when they come amongst those who exile them, any other people that comes amongst a larger society, by virtue of the fact that they melt into that great society, they achieve greatness and respect. Everybody loves them. Am Yisrael is not like that. Melting and being assimilated into is not going to bring us any blessing. Am Yisrael is not like that. Kishuhu levodod, when he is alone, ve'eino mitarev imahem, and does not mingle and mix with them, yishkon b'menucha u'bekavod. If he remains separate and distinct, then there will be honor and peace. The people of the land will see that the name of God is written upon them, and nobody is going to compete with him. Ubagoyim, this is his great kiddush. Ubagoyim, he says, if they want to melt into the greater society, if they want to assimilate, you know what the end is going to be? Kasher hu rotzel liyot muravim, when he wants to be part of that larger society. Lo yitchashav, eino nachshav, beinam litchashev klal la'adam. They're not going to be counted for anything. Jews can't make the mistake of thinking, if they're going to melt, they understand, we're Jews, never. The Jews of Germany in the 18th and 19th century, they wanted to become Germans, and what they contributed to Germany in every field of human endeavor didn't help. It didn't help at all. They were most probably despised even more. So he says, "Hein Am Levodot, if you're going to remain alone and maintain your uniqueness, Yishkon you will continue to dwell on the face of this earth. Upakoyim. But if you want to become part of them, lo yitchashav, you're not going to be counted anything. You will simply be denigrated and downtrodden before them. We have to learn the sense of our self-worth. There comes a moment where we can no longer permit ourselves to be the one that's blamed for everything and the one that's overwhelmed by a bad word said by Obama. We have to be able to stand up against the world. We have nothing to be ashamed of our morality. Right, if I'm already on that page, number three. Not possible to go away from this parasha without, of course, the great pasuk said by Bilam, with which we open our davening every morning. It's unbelievable. Mar tovu ohalecha Yaakov, mishkenotecha Yisrael. How goodly are our tents, O Jacob, and your dwelling places, O Israel. Mar tovu ohalecha Yaakov, mishkenotecha Yisrael. And Rashi says, when they're on the spot, what was it that he saw that brought him to exclaim, my, how goodly are your tents, O Yaakov? So he says, because the way their tents were lined up in the desert, it wasn't the door, the opening of one tent facing the opening of another tent. It was staggered. In other words, what they really did was, they were protecting, each family protected their own privacy and made certain that they would not invade the privacy of another. It was a sense of smooth and modesty. No invasion of privacy. And he, this guy, standing on the mountain, he looks down there and he's amazed by this morality. I forgot something I said last night. We had in this room we had a dinner last night for the staff of the Israel Center. The first time we ever had it. The whole staff was here. Well, most of the staff. It was a very interesting experience. So they had asked me to say a few words. So I said I said the following. The Ramban. Seven. I know I'm taking you around. The Ramban on this Sedra makes the following statement. Who needed all these blessings from this ugly, evil, criminal, cruel fellow called Bilam who wants to kill the Jewish people? What do we need? What do we need it for? The man holds it as a whole big piece of Rabbeinu Moshe ben Nachman. Who needed it all? And number seven, the chayin hoya hachefetz l'shem hanichvad. This was the desire of the Holy One. Mitchilo sheyelech imahem. You see, because he's dealing with another problem. Problem he's dealing with, and all of the Mepharshim deal with this problem. At first, God tells him, don't go. Then later on, God relents and tells him, yeah, you can go. So there comes the problem. What is this? God changes his mind. I mean, or you know, if you just put a little pressure on him, just put a little pressure on God, and he'll just, he'll collapse like a house of cards. I mean, all the first one, what's this meaning? Yeah, go, don't go. And then he tells him, do go. And when he does go, it says that God got angry with him. It becomes very, very confusing. And all of the Mepharshim deal with this. I mean, years ago we dealt with it. I'm not going to go into that now. But the Rambam says, you know what God wanted? God really, from the very beginning, wanted him to go. But he wants Bilam to go as long as he and they are fully aware that there are parameters that belong to and only say what God wants it to say. God wants them to go after he lets them know that he's not going to curse them. That he's going to conduct himself exactly the way God wants him to. This sentence, it was God's will that the Jewish people should be blessed by a Navi, so to speak, from amongst the Goyim. We want that we should be blessed by the Goyim. Now the Ramban makes the statement and doesn't explain why. I mean, who needs it? Gerashah, you want us to have a bracha? Give us a bracha. Moshe will give us a bracha. My Chassidish Rebbe will give you a bracha. My Chassid will give you a bracha. An isha tzikonis and gedirba. What do I need this? So all the farshim go to work, each in their own way, attempting to explain Ramban. I said that I wanted to explain Ramban in a very balopatish way, the way that I understand it. We don't always see ourselves the way we should see ourselves. And you know what happens? Sometimes, in Yiddish they say it, and it's very true. I guess for a while, said for a mile. A guest for a while sees for a mile. Sometimes the guy who just comes in over here and takes a look at what's going on, and he sees things that by us are second nature already. We don't even pay attention to it all. It's such a basic and essential part of our makeup. For example, he takes a look and he sees that their tents don't face one another. Did we ever pay any attention to that? Did we walk around saying, "Hey, you should see our tents. We don't have our tents with the opening spacing one another." No. That was so natural for the Jewish people. We don't see the things we don't see. Until some guy comes along and tells us, "My, he's overwhelmed. My tovu alecha Yaakov, mishkenotecha Yisrael." Even hein anam levada mishka. From out there, he sees that even better than we do. So I have I'm thinking about this yesterday in the morning. Somebody who lives next door to me doesn't talk to me often. He's a nice fellow. Don't talk to me often. Sometimes I think people are afraid to talk to me. Anyway, he comes over to me and he tells me, I mean, he chose the wrong day and the wrong person. He comes over to me and he tells me something about, Tel Aviv, they want to open stores on Shabbos, Chilul Shabbos, until Shabbos. And there it is, he's going on about Chilul Shabbos. I told him, "Listen, guy, now you hear this. You hear this." I had said it here some while ago, about a year ago. There was an article in the Jerusalem Post. They have on Sunday, they have Judy Siegel Itzwitz, I think on page 5 or 6, and the opposite page is the travel page. All the Horei Choshech in the world that you can go to, the cruises, you have a whole page. And down at the bottom, there's Mark Feldman. Mark Feldman has a column about travel. So, and maybe it was in a year ago. So he writes a column. A couple went into their travel agent someplace in Europe, and they said, "Listen, we have 10 days. And this is our budget. Put together for us a package any place in the world that will fit that budget and would give us the most for our money. So the travel agents went to work on it. They're all going. And then the travel agent, they come back and the travel agent says, I have it for you. 10 days in Israel. And he begins to go through what they should do day by day. He gives them a tremendous itinerary of what to do in Israel. And then someplace in the middle of this article, he says, look, yeah, the one thing about Israel you have to remember, that as far as Saturday is concerned, you're on your own. You have to make your own arrangements on Saturday because that place basically shuts down on Saturday. We over here can find some place where there's cool Shabbos, but the guy out there takes a look at this country and he says, this country is the only country in the world where Shabbos is a Shabbos. I told this to this guy. He fainted. They still have to scrape him up from the floor over there. So I said, you know what? Sometimes you have to look at things like a guy. Don't go creaking and looking for Shabbos every place and then the whole country is full of a whole bunch of Achalim Shabbos. Not so. I believe I also told him, this is also something I said some while ago. If you Google the Independence Days, you'll get a list of every country in the world, most of them Pashtunian countries, every country in the world, what its Independence Day is. Of course, it's appropriate that I say it today because it's July 1st, which is Canada Day. Today is Canada's Independence Day, and in honor of my wife, who's Canadian born, and later this week is going to be July 4th, America's, okay. And here they have this list, I think it's about 170, 180 Independence Days. Each one takes one line. Canada, July 1st. America, July 4th. I don't know who wins. Is France July 14th? Whatever it is. There's only one country in this world that has three lines. Because when it comes to Yom HaTzmaut of Israel, you have to take every day of the week, and depending on where its proximity to Shabbos is, it's the only Independence Day in the world that keeps moving. It's a moving, you understand? It can be this year it moved. We celebrated Yom HaTzmaut on the 6th of Iyar this week. This year, not on the 5th of Iyar, because the 4th, which is Memorial Day, was on Sunday. We don't want Memorial Day on Sunday. It's too close to Shabbos. The day before Shabbos, you understand? This cool Shabbos Medina is the only one in the world that has a moving Independence Day, and dependent on only one thing, its proximity to Shabbos. If there is blow, my neighbor there was just like you. I also like to point out to these people, I've written a long letter to somebody who replied to somebody who had written a long letter to me. And I'm not, I decided it was ready about 2 weeks ago. And I said, no, I cannot publish it during this period of time when Kleinsohn is concerned with the fate of three boys. I'll wait for a later date. So I write to this fellow who also was a big complainer about Chil Shabbos. Do you realize that this is the only state in the world that came into being with an act of defiance? Remember just a little earlier, I described at 12 o'clock midnight, the tricolor and the Union Jack go down. And a minute later, the skull and crossbones goes up. The British were supposed to leave on Friday night at 12, May 15th, 1948. And along went Ben Gurion and all those Kilainim and they brought the Hachrazat HaMedina back by 8 hours. 8 hours earlier. The British are not going to leave until Friday night at 12. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, in the museum in Tel Aviv, came the declaration of the State of Israel. Why? So that everybody who is invited to that ceremony should be able to make it home before Shabbos. Which means, of course, that the Medina, this Chiloinish Medina, was born in an act of Kiddush Shem Shemayim. I told them that like they didn't know what to do with themselves. Then you can't even scrape them up from the floor. I say the Ramban is telling us that the Rebbe Shem wanted that this Guri should bless us. Because there are insights that he has about us that we don't even have about ourselves. We take so much for granted, and they see more. They see so much more. There's so many things that the bias are natural and normal, and this is the way it is, and there's no other way. And then he comes in, this guest for Havayah comes in, and he takes a look, and look at the things he gets excited about. He's even able to look back all the way to the Eruv Kmir, Rosh Tzurim Erenu, Umigvol Tashurenu. I see him from his very beginnings, where he came from, and Avram, and Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. These people have eternity coursing through their veins. He sees it. We don't see it all the time. But with all the great things that Bilam has to say about the Jewish people, he just doesn't get it. He doesn't get it. The Chob, of course, pointed out one of the things. He sees loneliness. He doesn't see a noble aloneness. He doesn't see an aloneness of sanctity and majesty and greatness and holiness and purity. He sees loneliness. He sees something negative. Different, but negative. The beautiful, beautiful article by Rav Elimelech Bar Shaul, Or Hashom, he was the Chov of Rehovot. He must have passed through about 40 years ago. A young man, I think he was 52 years old. But he left a number of Svarim that are precious. And if you want to tell you what he says. Number five. Number five is the fourth oration of the Bilam, the last one. Here he's going to tell Balak what the future of this people is. One, two, three, four, five. Go to the fifth line. Here he begins. At Enu Velawata, I see him, but it's not now. Ashurenu, I can espy him in the future. Velokoro, but it's not close. You know what he's talking about? Mashiach. I can see it. Not close. Dorach kochov miYaakov, a star is going to shoot out of Yaakov, the kar kol b'nei sheit, and he is going to destroy the sons of sheit. And he is beginning to describe now how Israel will rise up against their enemies throughout all of history. He's going to describe now war, death, destruction, battle. Vahoya, Edom Yadesha, Edom shall be a conquest. Vahoya Yadesha, Seir, Seir. here also will be a conquest by far of his enemies. In other words, the enemies who enslaved us for 2,000 years and have gulled us by Goyim, they are going to receive their punishment at the end, and it's going to come from them. The Yisrael Oser Choyim, and Israel shall attain success. I don't like that translation. They're going to be mighty, they're going to be strong, they're going to vanquish their enemies. V'yered b'Yaakov, one from Jacob shall rule and destroy the remnant of the city, v'havid sarid b'yir, v'yaras amalek, and he saw amalek, v'yisov v'shalov v'yoma, and he lifted his parable, he talks of poetry, reishis goyim amalek, amalek is the first among nations, v'achaditov, and you know what his end is going to be? A day of absolute destruction. Absolute destruction. By that attack, Cainy. Then he saw the Cainites. By the Yisrael Shalom, he spoke about them and he said, Eitan Moshavecha, strong is your dwelling. And the Sim Basera Kinecha, your nest is amongst the rest. Canaan were the family of Yitro that joined the Jewish people. Ki in Yelevo Er Kayin and Ma Ashur Tishbeka, because the Canaan should be laid waste till when can Assyria take you captive? There are another two sukkah that I don't have here. And he describes more nations that are going to be destroyed and vanquished and obliterated. And he ends with the same words that he ended Pasuk 20. A day obeyed, absolute destruction. And so Rav Elmelech Bar Shaul said, the great difference between Bilam, the Navi of the nations of the world, and the prophets of Israel is right here. His last oration, he sees death, destruction, and ends on the note of a day obey, everything's destroyed. That's exactly where the prophets of Israel begin, and they describe what the world is going to be after that. Bar Yashem Lemelech al Kol Ha'aretz, God is going to be a king of the whole world. There will be prosperity, there will be joy. The nations will come to Yerushalayim to greet the God of Israel. The prophets are full of the beauty and the sanctity and the holiness and the majesty of the end of days. But no, he can't see that. He's incapable of seeing that. He can only see death and destruction, and for him that's the end. Light years separate Bilam from the prophets of Israel. Light years. They inhabit two different planets. This is a planet of death, destruction, terror. What do you think is going on in the world? We have major forces that want to crush and destroy and kill and maim and take over the whole world. So, you know, we are this... It's so funny to say it, but we're this island of tranquility. Even on a terrible day like today, we are an island of tranquility in a world that's out there destroying itself. It's unbelievable. I think it's pages 8 and 9 of the Jerusalem Post every morning. What do you do there when you come to 8 or 9? You know, I've been teaching you how to read the Jerusalem Post for a long time. When you come to pages 8 and 9, all you do is read the headlines, nothing else. How many were killed in Afghanistan? What bomb went off in Baghdad? Policemen shot in the Sinai. It's unbelievable. It's all pages 8 and 9 are death and destruction. Death and destruction. That's what's going on. That's the picture of the world in which we live. And here we are, the most unlikely place in the world. We are the island
of tranquility. Am levod al gishdom, ubakurim ugit chashav. Ma tovu olalecha Yaakov, yishkinotech Yisrael. The guest, the goy, is able to see at times even more than we can see. You know what this guy could not have seen? The awesome unity of the people of the last 18 days. It's unbelievable. We've been through a common experience that is unparalleled in the world. The last, well, we had a few other experiences like that. May of 1967, May, and the Six-Day War, maybe the Gulf War, but this was very intense for the last 18 days. Not many people on the face of this earth. Oh, in that great essay, I'm going to close with this, in that great essay, Kol Dodido Fake, the Chov describes the common fate. The Gemara brings an unbelievable story of somebody who came to the Mishmedosh to ask, a child was born with two heads. Is it one child or two children? And that makes a difference in a lot of halachas. So the answer to the Gemara was, if you pour hot water on one, does the other cry? If that happens, that's one child. So he says, that's Klal Yisrael. A Jew lives in trouble one place in the world, and the Jew in the other part of the world feels it. That's one people. Did Bill see that much? No, I don't think he saw that. But there's no question about it, that he saw things that we took for granted. But we don't think we should take anything for granted about the Jewish people. And therefore I think there is what emerges from this unity of the last 18 days is that we should learn that we have to look at the good of Klal Yisrael. Don't go knicking, looking for Chul Shabbos or Treifus someplace. Go look for the beauty, and there's a tremendous amount of beauty in this people. You close that. That's it.